Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 104. We are discussing the Mayakoba Golf Classic on the PGA Tour and the Ned Bank Challenge on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Ducking and diving.
Wheeling
and dealing. Family life.
Yeah, juggling.
Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we're available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Paul, you should follow him at Golf Betting. Follow me at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Right. Now, next week is our last show, Paul.
It is.
Of 2019.
It's light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, it's grey, isn't it? might actually be able to have a life for a month or so.
Yeah.
We can't complain, though.
No, it's good because then the excitement builds as we get towards January for the start.
Oh, after a couple of weeks, I'm just desperately trying to work out who's going to win the tournament at Kapalua.
Yeah.
And then I change my mind, of course, when I write the tips. But let's get away from all this rubbish. What I would really like next week, Paul, is a listener review. So if one of you or a couple of you out there could just take some time to log into Apple Podcasts or iTunes and write us a review that we will then read out at the start of our last 2019 show, that would be absolutely fantastic. Don't forget, of course, that in terms of iTunes and Apple Podcasts, the reviewing marks and the volume of the reviews is really intrinsic in how the podcast gains its visibility in terms of their recommended pods. So please take time to rate and review us for the last show of 2019. Leave your name in the description and, of course, we'll read it out on the show. Right. I haven't got a review to read out, so what I thought I'd do, Paul, is highlight to the listeners, and we mentioned this last week, but it is almost deadline time in terms of this fantastic boosted offer with William Hill. Now, we know that the offer's been extremely popular.
So it should be.
William Hill, for a period of time, have been running their Bet 10, Get £30 of Free Bets offer for new customers, which, of course, is exactly the same in Euro, so Bet 10, Get 30. But until, is it Thursday of this week?
Yeah, midnight GMT on Thursday the 14th. So
If you sign up via one of our qualifying links at Golf Betting System, of course, there is a link through to the website in the podcast description, you can access their enhanced, boosted, 100% free match bet up to £100 or €100 if you're in the Republic of Ireland. So they effectively match your first stake on your first qualifying bet up to, between £10 and £100, which is an exceptional offer. And it closes midnight on Thursday.
Very, as you said, been popular, and so it should be with that level of generosity compared to the market as it is at the moment, which is generally far down, isn't it? It's down in the kind of bet five, get 20s, or bet 10, get 30 kind of region. So William Hill putting their neck out there to see if people like that kind of deal. But yeah, if you fancy it, take advantage of it over the next couple of days before it expires on the 14th.
Key terms and conditions on the website. Just worth noting that across the majors this year, they were 7 each way on the PGA, 7 each way on the US Open, and then the Open Championship, they went 10 places each way. And that, of course, is something that they could well be running with again in 2020. So always worth having these sports accounts up your sleeve to maximise the each-way places at these major championships.
That was a big move for them because they hadn't gone anywhere near 10 places in previous majors, had they? So.
It's always been Paddy Power, Betfair, Coral.
That's right, yeah.
Who instigated it. I think in 2017, Coral were the first to go 10 each-way at a major.
Yeah.
So for William Hill to step up to the mark and go 10 each-way was a huge step forward for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Indeed.
So that offer available up to 100% up to £100 or €100 on your first bet, available via Golf Betting System key terms on the website. Okay, last week, you and I, we had it surrounded, didn't we? We had it absolutely surrounded, the Turkish Airlines Open.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, half the field had it surrounded. It was one of the tightest golf tournaments I think I've ever seen.
I think whichever angle you look, someone's going to be able to come up with an equally bad sob story for the week. It was that close, wasn't it? Even the players who didn't get into that six-man playoff at the end, there were a number just below that who had viable chances. With the scoring options and scoring capability of that back nine at the Montgomery Max, you know, all sorts can happen. And even the players who finished in 18s and 17s with a little bit of luck here or there, or the odd putt dropping, could have also made it into the playoff. But massively exciting,
I think it's a great course, great crowd. It's always one of my favourite European Tour events, and you all tend to. I think hopefully it's going to stay at that Montgomery Max because I think it's a better course from an excitement perspective. Just as you said, the way that the setup works on the back nine.
Yeah, yeah, and you know clearly they had a first by playing the playoff in under the floodlights as well, which was a new departure for the European Tour and proved that it could be done. It still looked a bit gloomy from what I could see, but
they had no option, did they?
No, not really. No, it was night was falling or had fallen by that point, so they needed to get the job done. But
the way they split the six up, is that something you've seen in the past?
Well, you don't tend to get six-man playoffs, do you? So, yeah, what option have they got, really? They could play all six of them off the same tee, which would be quite painful, I guess, or go three and three as they did. But, yeah, whether that gives an advantage to the second group or not is a matter of opinion. Not that it actually mattered in the end, because Hatton went out in the first of the three, didn't he? It's... Yeah, he rode his luck a little bit, Tyrrell, didn't he? But
when he chipped in, you kind of knew it.
Yeah, yeah. These Rolex events, and they, you know, whichever way you cut it, you look back and you think, well, ultimately, kind of the better quality player has tended to prevail.
Yeah.
Even though you've got a number of players there who had a viable chance. Now, as you said, you were on Bobby McIntyre,
who
didn't quite make it, but he was in the mix for a full 4 days, wasn't he? I was on Victor Perez, who had a couple of outstanding chances. I mean, 3-putt on 13 was just kind of rip your hair out time. And then he had his chance on the final green regulation as well. It was at 15, 18 for Eagle, rather, which would have won it outright and just drifted by the left side of the hole. But yeah, you know, there was him. There was a number of players who had chances, and you know, each of them, I guess, you know, I'm looking at Perez in particular because I was clearly following his round closer than any of the others. But I guess all of the players will be able to look back and you know pinpoint a single missed putt or a bad bounce or a bit of bad luck here or there that's contributed to them not getting beyond 20 under par. But Kirk Kitayama in the playoff, he had a great chance to win it, didn't he? He had, 6 foot or so on the, was it the second playoff hole, I think it was. Missed that putt. And as you said, you know, Hatton's just there and quality player in the end, he gets over the line.
You don't get many surprise winners at Rolex Series events. I can remember Brandon Stone at the Scottish Open at 100-1. Does the Dunhill Links, is that a... It tends to be a very established name that gets the job done, isn't it?
Yeah.
And in this case, it was Hatton. Was he at 50th or 49th in the world?
He needed to act, didn't he? He seemed kind of surprised at the end himself that he'd won, particularly on Sunday, because, you know, he'd played well up until that point, but I don't think he was at his best on Sunday, but... you know, when push comes to shove and putts are being missed and, you know, it's getting to that heated part of the tournament, then that little bit of experience, that little bit of nous almost is what can see a player over the line. So, yeah, fair play to him. Yeah, disappointing because I was on him the week before and just felt his price was a little bit too short last week. But there you go. That's golf betting for you, isn't it?
In terms of the race to Dubai, you just get the feeling that Mr. Wiesberg is starting to get his head around the enormity of it, don't you?
Yeah,
he's leaving that door ajar.
Yeah, he's had a couple of opportunities with no one else really making any progress to step up and put, you know, clear daylight between him and everyone else. But he's not done it. He's got another chance this week. But given what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, you wouldn't.
Well, it's not as if he even needs to win it, is it? Is it a couple of top tens would have probably got it all locked up?
Yeah. Because, you know, half the time the other players that he's competing against aren't actually playing. So, you know, he's got a massive opportunity to go and go and push himself well clear of the pack. But it's just not happened for him when push has come to shove over the last few weeks. So, interesting to see what he does this week. But, yeah, it kind of gives you the impression it's all going to come down to next week at the Earth Course. Yeah. So.
Mr. Rahm. Mr. McIlroy, they must be licking their chops.
Yeah. Shane Lowry's still in there with a chance if Wiesberger doesn't do anything big this week. Matt Fitzpatrick's playing this week, so he's got a chance to get a bit, make up a bit of ground on Wiesberger. But we'll see. It's all going to come down to the final week by the looks of it.
Let's crack on then. Let's talk Ned Bank Challenge on the European Tour, and then we'll go over to Mexico for the PGA Tour event. So. What, this is one of those events that you always feel like you can nail. It's a short field, isn't it? A very high quality field, of course. Only the seriously better players on the Race of Dubai can get an invite to this.
Yeah, they've kind of tinkered around with the format over the years. So the Nedbank's been going for quite some time in some shape or form back on the Sunshine Tour. It used to be one of these kind of money bags, end of season jaunts for, you know, a dozen or so players who to just go there and earn a load of money.
Fly over there, yeah.
Yeah. You used to get the likes of Goose and play it and win it. And Jim Furyk won it a couple of times, didn't he? There's all sorts of players who used to come over and to just earn a few South African rand and a bucket load of OWGR points into the bargain as well.
That's right. It got absorbed into the European Tour playoffs, as they were called at that stage. But and it's a decent addition to the European Tour, undoubtedly.
Yeah, it is. I remember looking back at it at the time and thinking, it's a decent course. It'd be really interesting to see it played properly on the European Tour, and they've done that. I mean, they shifted to a 30-man format originally when it came over and upped that to 78 over the last 3 years. It's changed again this year. It's 60 plus three invites, so an odd number for any event, really. I'm not sure I've seen a 63-man field before. That's by the by, really. You've got, as you said, these players who are all jostling for position, either to get themselves in with a chance of having a run at it against Wiesberger next week, or some that are still trying to scrape into that top 60 so that they can qualify for the Earth Course next week and stand a chance of earning a few extra dollars at the season's finale. Again, as you said a second ago, there's not been a great deal of change, is there, really, in the Race to Dubai over the last few weeks? I mean, Hatton was the only one last week who made any significant progress, but he's up to sixth now. And realistically, you know, he would have had to be playing this week and win this week again to stand a chance of getting close to the top. So there's this kind of apathy, isn't there, to this to the Race to Dubai and winning it. You know, Rahm's not playing this week, Lowry's not playing. They're in second and third place. You know, if they really, really bothered about it, they'd be out here battling and straining every sinew to try and to win, but. Yeah.
It's clearly with the PGA Tour, they're forced to play these events as well. They're not forced to, but the whole concept of the playoffs means that, you know, you've got three tournaments now in 3 weeks, and they play them, and the money, you know, when they're throwing, is it 15 million now at the winner?
Yeah,
it's the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, it's a big.
I don't know in terms of Race to Dubai what the bonuses for becoming the Order of Merit winner, but it clearly doesn't really motivate the elite players, does it?
It's not. It's on a different level, isn't it? And that's the point, really. It's still the poor relation. Even though these three events, they were traditionally the final series, weren't they? These three events, I think it's just been called the Rolex series. Yeah, well, the final three events of the Rolex series now, whatever. However they've decided to name it. But yeah, they're big bucks events. But yeah, as you say, they're still just on a par with a regular PGA Tour event in that respect, aren't they, in terms of prize money. So it's nothing to get the big boys really excited. But even so, we've got a decent field here nonetheless. Louis Oosthuizen is the favourite this week at 9-1. Third at the WGC HSBC a few weeks back. So there's clearly some form there. We know with Louis, when he's that kind of player, isn't he, that you see progress through, gets a near miss and then potentially goes on and win. His last win was at the South African Open and he only just scraped through that 12 months or so ago. He just doesn't really win enough for me to be looking at him at that kind of single-digit price. But I know plenty are on him and there's plenty of reason to be interested in Louis Oosthuizen this week. Tommy Fleetwood 14-1, Stenson's 14, Matt Fitzpatrick the same price as well now, backed into 14-1. So a trio of second favourites there. Eric Van Rooyen 20-1, Bobby McIntyre still at his perennially short price 22-1, but the boy's going to win, isn't he? He's a quality player.
He is. Whether it's here, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, again, last week he kind of flattered to deceive. He looked really good in spots, didn't he? But
well, I'm just looking at the past winners here. Westwood in 18 at 40-1. Mm. Grace, the home champion, in 17 at 16. Norren, 20-1 in 2016, who had that amazing year. Leishman at 66s was a bit of a shocker.
Mm.
Although he had finished 11th at the HSBC, I think, two tournaments before, but came off a missed cut or something ridiculous to win this. Danny Willett at 25s and Thomas Bjorn at 30s. It doesn't shout 9-1 winner, does it?
No, and it doesn't really shout 200-1 winner either. It shouts that kind of juicy low to mid price, doesn't it? And, you know, where a lot of punters will be quite pleased to get involved with players who've got a viable chance. But yeah,
across that list, you have got a number of established players. I think that was that Willett's first European Tour victory in 40.
Quite possibly. I'm trying to think back now.
Don't worry, Paul. I'm on Google. You keep going. But all I was suggesting is, you know, they in the main. He says, trying to qualify his remark. They were experienced winners, all of those guys.
Yeah, and some quality there as well. You know, even with Leishman, you know, Leishman's the type of player that's been bandied about to win major championships.
Let me clarify on Willett. He'd won the BMW International Open in 2012. That was his second European Tour victory, the Ned Bank, in 2014.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. But yes, yeah, no massive shocks, but no massively short favourites either.
You know, you're looking at Bobby McIntyre; he doesn't fit that mould of winner.
No, and as we said a second ago, with these Rolex Series events, no matter how talented these maidens are they going to go and lift a prize that's as big as that, a title that's as big as that, as their first title? Yeah, it's debatable, really. You know, you look back, and Brooks Koepka won the Turkish Airlines Open as his first title, didn't he, a few years ago? But you know, Brooks Koepka, as we've seen, is a different gravy. So, I don't know. It's for me, he probably is more of an established player who gets over the line this week. But we'll come to that shortly. I'll get into the course a little bit. 7,831 yard par 72. It's the Gary Player Country Club. That sounds extremely long. Bear in mind, Sun City is played at altitude and it's pretty much 10% or thereabouts that you can put onto the yardage, or you can take off the yardage from the altitude. So in my mind, it plays closer to a kind of a 7,100, 7,200 yard par 72. So even though it looks extremely long on paper, and clearly you've still got to walk the 7,831 yards, it's just when you're playing your shots, they're going to be flying far further than they would do at sea level. Narrow fairways and thick rough bushes lining the fairways. It's not a claustrophobic kind of tree line test. It is still one though that demands a level of accuracy and a level of you've got to be able to plot your way around this course a little bit. It's not just a grip it and rip it type of track. It's an interesting track. I actually really, really enjoy this particular layout. It's going to play quite soft by the looks of it. Thunderstorms over the last few days, as I've been keeping an eye on the forecast and the lead up to the event. It looks like thunderstorms could well continue on and off up until Thursday, and then it should clear through and we should have a few days of decent weather from Friday onwards for the tournament itself. There might be a bit of disruption on Thursday, we shall see. But I suspect that does mean that it's going to play relatively soft. I expect the rough will be quite tricky and gnarly should you find your way into it. But if you can keep yourself in the straight and narrow, I expect you're going to find there's plenty of opportunity to score on the greens here. They're cracking quality bent grass greens. So if you can find fairways, find your greens in regulation, I think the scoring opportunities are there to be had. And that's kind of borne out by the winning scores here. And Grace won at 11 under, which is the lowest score, the worst score that we've seen since he came to the European Tour. All the way up to Thomas Bjorn, who won at 20 under. So in soft, warm, and fairly windless conditions, which is what we should expect from Friday onwards this week, I expect you're going to be able to score. There's also going to be quite a variation in scores. I expect you'll find some players have an absolute disaster here, whereas others can go out and shoot a really, really strong low score. So by the end of Sunday, there's going to be a huge gulf, in my view, between the player who's sitting right at the bottom of the leaderboard and the guy right at the top, you know, potentially 30 strokes or so. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever to see that kind of differential. Going back to the players who have won, all of them had a top 10 in their last 9 starts. It's a fairly elite field, so you'd expect that, I guess. Grace was in the worst form in terms of drawing just an average of those finishes over the last few events. But then he had finished 15th and 15th consecutively on these two events coming in. So there were some signs that he was running into some form, and he had a bit of form around the Sun City track as well. He'd finished 4th and 3rd over his last 2 attempts. So there was a bit of course form and a bit of sneaky current form in there for Brandon Grace. Westwood, he absolutely loves this place. He'd won it twice before it came onto the European Tour as an event, and he had also shown some reasonable form coming in, so I think he'd had a couple of top 5 finishes in his last 6 starts as well. So There was fairly a fair amount to grab onto in terms of those two winners. Prior to that, Bjorn, Willett, Leishman and Noren were all playing this event for their first time. So in terms of their course history or in terms of their event history, it was non-existent. So you would have been just guessing in that respect for those guys. I mean, for me, I think you're going to need a level of control. High greens and regulation in decent conditions here is the key to unlocking this track here at Sun City. Bent grass putting form is an important factor here, as is the fact it's played at altitude. And as we've said a number of times in the past, some players are quite comfortable adjusting for the altitude and adjusting how their mathematics works for the different ways or the different lengths of the clubs or the ball flies from their clubs. This is a fairly standard altitude test in that respect. And, you know, 10% is fairly common in terms of a way, in terms of a metric for them to calculate. So I suspect those players who performed well at altitude before, those players who played well in South Africa before, would be a good indication for those who may well play well this week. Boiling it all down, the field of 63, I've gone for 3 players altogether. I've left the top of the market alone this week, and I've started my team with Lee Westwood, who's defending this week at 33-1. We said the winning scores were between 16 and 66 over the last few years, and three of my 4 picks all fall into that bracket. And I think that's likely to be the kind of area that we find the winner come from. We've also seen, as we said, that, you know, if you're trying to pick these tall maidens in this kind of field, it's a tricky old affair to try and get on over the line. So it kind of leads me to someone with, you know, more experience. And Westwood's got that in abundance, isn't he? I mean, if you look at Sun City, the Sun City Resort in its entirety, and they hold some Sunshine Tour events here at the Gary Player Country Club. There's another track, Lost City, I think it is, that flanks the same resort here, and they play some of them over the two tracks here. But if you boil down all of Lee Westwood's form here on the resort, it is absolutely outstanding. He's got three Ned Bank wins. He's got a further win on the Dimension Data Pro-Am. There's a host of top tens around these parts as well. He absolutely loves this part of the world. He won this back-to-back. So in terms of defending champions, he's already done this. He's already won this event as a defending champion. He won in 2010 and 2011, so clearly he can do it. In fact, that's the third time he's defended a tournament successfully, or he's defended three tournaments successfully over his career so far. He's also got one of those very rare three-peats in there as well, when he won in Japan quite early on in his career for three consecutive years on the trot. So, you know, there's plenty to suggest that whereas some players can't get on with the fact that they're defending, Westwood, it just doesn't bother him. He just gets on with his game. And if he likes the track and he's feeling good and his game's in a good place, then he's got a chance of getting the job done. And you go back to last year, he got a couple of top five finishes in his last six starts. So you could arguably say that he was in slightly better form last year coming to it than this year. But if you look at what he's actually achieved this year, fourth at the Open Championship is far better result than those low-key events that he finished top five in last year. 10th last week in Turkey. He looked really good in Turkey for most of the event. And he's another one of these players who, had it gone right for him on the back nine on Sunday, could have been pushing for that playoff. His short game just let him down. There was just a couple of chips that didn't quite come off on Sunday, but you know, one of those goes in rather than leading to a bogey, and so it's a different game altogether. 62nd in the world rankings now, so for someone like Westwood, that's going to be a big carrot for him to try and perform over this week and next to get himself into the top 50. So I think he's going to be super motivated this week, Lee Westwood. And has a great chance of defending his title at 33-1. A couple of mid prices now. Shubhankar Sharma, who I backed yesterday, 55-1. He's been backed in a little bit. There's still a bit of 50s out there if you're quick. Now, I backed him in Portugal 3 weeks ago and he finished 21st, I think it was, overall. I mean, he missed too many greens that week. But if you look at how he played last week, he was fourth for greens in regulation in Turkey, 81.9%. Suggests to me that he's found the answer to that question that was being asked in Portugal, which prevented him from going on and really pushing for that title on the Algarve. And something's percolating with him, isn't it? We've seen a real jump in form from him over the last couple of months or so. He was third going into Sunday at Wentworth before falling away on the final day. Finished seventh at the Italian Open, seventh last week. And what was interesting last week is there were two really cracking rounds in there, 64 on Friday, 64 on Sunday as well, and he led the field in terms of par breakers. So he shot overall an eagle and 26 birdies over the course of the week. So clearly scoring very, very nicely. There's also a bit of South African form out there as well. He won the Joburg Open in 2017. So in terms of, you know, grasses and altitude, yeah. You know, it ticks that box there. 27th here on debut last year, and he improved all the way through. He finished with a 68, and it was looking good as he got towards the end of the 4 days. So I think Shubhankar Sharma is a strong each way punt here this week, as is Christian Bezuidenhout.
Bezuidenhout,
yes, yeah. Something along those lines.
We're getting there, aren't we?
In terms of the pronunciation, yeah.
He's such a visual player these days. You can't go very long without having to say him at some point.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Having such a good season,
we're getting plenty of practice. We're getting plenty of practice with his surname and crucifying it every other week. But yeah, he's currently 55-1 again. He's been nibbled in a little bit since yesterday, but he should be right at home here. Joburg native. he's had a huge year, as you said. Second in Qatar, ninth in Kenya, fourth in India, third in Germany, one in Valderrama, third at Wentworth. And it's interesting, the Wentworth link here, because you read through the winners here over the last few years, and you've got the likes of Alex Noren, Wentworth winner, Danny Willett won this year at Wentworth, Lee Westwood's won at the West Course on the old match play event that used to be played there years and years ago. And some of those other players that haven't actually won at Wentworth but have done well here, Thomas Bjørnsgaard, I think he's got a runner-up finish at Wentworth. Brandon Grace has done well there as well. You know, there's lots of correlation there. And although this isn't a claustrophobic tree line test in that same respect, I think some of the nuances of the course, the way that you need to play the track, will carry across from that course to this. And I can see the link. I can see that there's a there's a positive to draw between those two tracks. So the fact that Bezuidenhout finished third here, I change the pronunciation every time I say it. The fact that he finished third at Wembley.
Just call him Christian.
Year. Christian, yeah. That's just as bad when I try and say that. It was quiet last week, but 17th at the WGC was positive. And it's got to be a practical experience here. Finished 25th on the Sunshine Tour in this on this layout. Also finished second at the South African Open. He's won three smaller events in South Africa over the years. So clearly clearly comfortable playing on the home soil. So I think that he is worth a punt again each way at 55-1 out there right now if you're quick.
Why isn't Ross Fisher playing?
He didn't get in. He needed a little bit more. He was on an invite last week, so he needed to do slightly more to get through. But yeah, it's another one, isn't it? There were so many players coming down the stretch that could have pushed on, you know, with that birdie run that would have, a couple of birdies or an eagle or whatever would have pushed him into a winning position. But yeah, Fisher, there's something percolating again with Fisher, isn't there? He's starting to look a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more capable.
He's got a very strong record in South Africa as well, hasn't he, Fish?
I don't know. When he pops up, it won't be a surprise to anyone, but trying to pick that week when he does it is going to prove to be quite a tricky task, I think.
One that you said to me you were going to back all the way and have actually lamely not backed him is Alex Noren. So I think I might take him at 25-1 this week.
Yeah, you know, after two rounds, I was quite keen on taking him, but I went back and watched his second round again, and even though he scored really, really well, there was a lot of ragged play in it. And following it through, and it really caught up with him on the Saturday and the Sunday, or Saturday in particular, had an awful day, and he was out of it by then. It's interesting because you look at his raw stats and his stats suggest that he played really well. But then, you know, when you're actually eyeballing how he's playing, you think, well, that he doesn't quite marry up. He's playing shots from all sorts of positions here that would suggest that if you go to a track that's a little bit tighter like it is at Sun City, he may well get found out. So, yeah, I kind of reluctantly let him go. But
I might just have to back him.
Yeah, I may well be proven wrong. We shall
15th
see.
At the Dunhill Links, 18th at the Open de France, 15th in Bermuda, 28th last week. And as you said, he had a very ragged weekend. But the thing that gets me with Noren, and it kind of follows on from your comment about Wentworth, is the guy is just a machine around Wentworth.
Yeah.
And if there is that kind of close association between Wentworth and here over in Sun City, I think he's the kind of player who, I'm following this line about world rankings, and we see it so often. He's dropped out of the world's top 50. Mm. He's 60th spot in the official world golf rankings. He needs a result, and he needs it desperately. Now, desperately, I mean, it's not the end of the world if he doesn't make it, but when you've been in the top 50 for such a period of time and you're kind of getting used to getting that Masters invite popping on your doormat in December, not to get that is quite a big deal. He's sixth at Wentworth in 08, eighth in 15, first in 17 and third in 18. He loves, oh, he loves it, Wentworth. Yeah. And we just know from experience that he's a bent grass or he's a bent power mix golf course player, isn't he?
Mm.
And I just noted, I'm not a huge fan of him on Bermuda. I'm not a huge fan of him on Paspalum. But for him to actually start, have two very strong rounds last week in Turkey would suggest once he actually finds a golf course that he's comfortable with bent grass, I think he could actually start making some more putts. I think that makes him a dangerous entity this week.
Yeah, and he said in an interview that he was feeling far more comfortable with a putter, and I think that showed, because particularly in that second round, he was making a lot of putts. It was just that his short game was having to save him from some pretty nasty positions, which generally it was. On the Friday, he was getting away with it. And then when he was finding the fairway, finding the greens, he was scoring heavily, and you know that was reflected in his score. It was just when that started to dry up, when he didn't start making those pars,
and he hasn't been backwards in contention for a fair old period of time. But as we know, these things change, don't they?
Yeah.
And they change quickly with these elite players.
Yeah. And going back to that, you know, if you go through the list of names of Rolex Series wins, you know, he's already, we've seen plenty of multiple Rolex Series winners, haven't we? So, you know, another player adding his name to that list, who's, you know, he's already on the list, who just doesn't feel out of kilter. There's plenty to like. It was only when I went back and really sat down and studied how he played over those days, from what I could glean from the coverage, that I thought, well, actually, I can't back him here personally. But that's the kind of comment from myself to you earlier in the week that tends to backfire.
And then, exactly, that's why I bought him.
Then I get a message through on Sunday saying, I thought you should have stuck with Noren like you suggested from the outset. So.
It's not really worth discussing the merits of Louis Oosthuizen at home. I mean, that's blatantly obvious for the tournament favourite. The one that might just be worthy of conversation, and one that I'm sure there's lots of listeners out there wanting a view on, would be Erik van Rooyen.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on him this week? Okay. Clearly, 20-1 is almost, I mean, it's not a huge price, not a great price. It's a kind of backable price compared to some of the ones around and probably above him. Do you think he's at?
If backable price is a matter of opinion, I guess, I couldn't have him at that price. Not in this field, not at this level. I think he's clearly stepped up. I think he's clearly made strong advances over this year. He's got that win, you know, he's got that monkey off his back, and you know, he's going to be buoyed by that for a period of time. And again, you know, there was a massive opportunity for him to win last week. I mean, to make the eagle to get himself into the playoff, that was a huge step for him. But then lamely dropped out. You know, Victor Perez lamely dropped out on the first hole of the playoff as well. So you know, disappointment for both of them there at that point. But 20-1 is too short for me, Steve. I can't take him at that price.
I've just run a search on him. Clearly South African. 56 tournaments in South Africa. He's won one of them.
Yeah.
Doesn't say 20-1, does it?
Doesn't scream back at me at 20-1, no.
Interesting.
No, I mean, for me...
I'm going to just add this. I think this is something we should add to the pod. Who came really close consideration?
Well, I've got one more to go through first, so let me do that, and then I'll go through my nearly list of players if I can pull it up while I'm.
Thought you said you're only backing three. It's four.
I've got three who are in that bracket from kind of sub 66-1. The final one is Scott Jameson. And you talked about Ross Fisher as having an excellent South African form line. Scott Jameson really does turn it on when he comes to South Africa. He won the Nelson Mandela. You remember that Nelson Mandela? It was that farcical 36-hole affair where...
Didn't they play it within a horse racing track or something? It was like 4,000 yards.
Yeah, well, it got flooded, didn't it? The weather was horrific. And then the... The second
record in South Africa, isn't it? I'm just looking.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's really, really good. He they played the final. They played only 36 holes in there. They played the second 36 with number of holes that had been reduced in terms of their length. So a lot of the par fives are playing as par threes. He shot 57 in that final round to win in a playoff. So he got his win. It ranks as a genuine European Tour win, but clearly he would want to add a genuine four-rounder to that at some point in his career. Actually, he nearly won the week after at Leopard Creek, so again, more South African form. That win had got him into the Volvo Golf Champions that used to run as the equivalent of the Century Tournament of Champions, effectively, on the European Tour. He nearly won that as well. That was his first start the following year, second in that. Four top seven finishes in his last seven South African starts. One of those was here at Sun City, who was second at Brandon Grace, having led into the final round that year, a couple of years back. So he's got course form, loves South Africa. And actual recent form's a little bit under the radar. 12th at Crans Sur Sierre. Actually, 12th was exactly what Lee Westwood did last year at Crans before he came and won it. He led the KLM Open after 36 holes. He was 10th last week in Turkey. Looks really good in Turkey, actually, for lots of for good stretches.
He was right. So. His name was quite near the top of the leaderboard the whole way through.
Yep. There was plenty to like there. 65th in the race to Dubai as well. So they will do this final cut for who gets through to the Earth course next week. So he needs a good week to really push through and rubber stamp his position for next week. So at 100-1 with some good recent current form and an absolutely stellar South African form line. Mm.
I've just backed him, Paul. I've got seven places with Betfair Sportsbook. I'm taking him at 80-1 right now.
Yeah,
that record is stellar.
Indeed.
Did you say second here?
Yeah, finished second here, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I don't think he's a winner, but he's a great each-way punter, 80-1.
Yeah, I think there's far worse each-way punts. And there wasn't much else in kind of the three-figure bracket that really really interested me this week.
Who was the close one, then?
Well, apart from Alex Noren, who was there, Hao Tong Li I toyed with. Everyone was on him last week and he didn't do anything, but that's the recipe for someone to come through and
that's what happened with Danny Willett, wasn't it, a few years ago?
Yeah. I guess the one who was at a decent price who came close to
the DP World Tour Championship.
Yeah, indeed.
Willett, everyone was on him the week before here. Yeah. And then he goes and wins
then you give it up and he goes and wins the following week. Justin Harden was probably the one who came closest to me. He played some decent stuff last week and he's at a decent price as well. And he's showing snippets of form. Andrew Pavan's been showing lots of consistent form as well. And he was another one.
I did look at Pavan. He's the kind of player that would win one of these and you wouldn't be overly shocked because he's actually stepping up to the mark a lot more.
Yeah.
He started really fast in Turkey, didn't he, Pavan?
Yeah. And if you look back, over his last 2, maybe 3 months, there's lots of very strong, consistent play. It's just not breaking, not really rewarding each way punters, which is what you'd want to see if you're going to take him that kind of 50-1 price. So yeah, I ended up just plumping with the four that I've got, the three shorter prices, and then Scott Jameson to top it off for the week.
Thank you for that. Mayakoba Golf Classic on the PGA Tour. We've got PGA Tour action this week. We've got that this week, and then the RSM Classic on Sea Island next week to close the PGA Tour action for 2019. It's a reasonable field. I think this is one of the tournaments that's actually benefited from the wraparound season. We're now getting the likes of a few top 50s in here in the world. Tony Finau. We got Jason Day, Matt Kuchar, Billy Horschel, Ches Reavie, Kevin Kisner, Abraham Anser, and Keegan Bradley in the field this week. So it can't be sniffed at. We actually had Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler here last year, if you remember. Ricky Fowler was going to play this year.
That's right, he pulled out
literally on Friday as the... I've forgotten Jason Day, of course. Jason Day's in the field at 29.
It was poorly, is that right?
Ricky was. Yeah. Because I wanted Ricky in there just to boost the prices a couple of points.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because clearly Ricky would have been favourite, even though he hasn't played since the Tour Championship. But I remember a couple of years ago he came here and he was 10-1 favourite, having done exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So you'd have expected you'd have had Fowler around 12-14-1 mark, and they might have moved a few people out. But I think it's a great field for this level of tournament. Jason Day, Victor Hovland's playing at 20s. They're sharing favouritism. Kuchar, Hovland and Day. Finau, there's a little sliver of 22s. Sharing that with Billy Horschel, who's been playing some good golf this year. Joachim Wunderkid Neiman at 30s with Charles Howe the third, who you thought I was going to tip up. Abraham Anser, 33s with Russell Knox. The Enigma, who is Emiliano Griot at 35s, the statistician, four-time major winner. Scotty Scheffler also at 35-1. And then the likes of Aaron Wise, Keegan Bradley, Kevin Kisner at 40. So it is a decent field. It's one of those tournaments, and I think it's similar to the Ned Bank, although they're completely poles apart. One's at altitude, one's on the coast. Well, you always think you've got a chance here because there's some decent kind of statistical skill set trends that you want to be looking at.
Yeah.
And for me, it's quite a simple equation. For me, it's guys that are clearly excellent ball strikers, don't have to be long, but excellent ball strikers who can just convert enough chances with their neat approach play from that 5 to kind of 15 feet area to actually get the scoring going in the right direction. That's exactly where I'm at this week. And statistically, that tends to come through here. It's a little bit similar also to yours in terms of the price of winners here. Kuchar was 22 under, Keziah 19 under in 17, Pat Perez 21 under, GMAC 18 under in 15. Hoffman 17 under, Harris English 13, 21 under. Got to shoot birdies. The course is going to be, I think, soft. There's been a lot of rain in the area. Rain yesterday, Monday. Rain today forecasted at like 80% Tuesday. I think we're going to see soft fairways. We're going to see, as ever here, soft greens. We are talking about the Gulf of Mexico here. Playa del Carmen, which clearly is a very, very popular tourist destination, and there's some rather nice hotels dotted around this golf course, hence why a lot of players come and play here, because they bring the family along with them. But yes, key tournament skill averages, so taking all the winners from 2011 through 2018, driving distance 30th, accuracy 33rd, greens and regulation 10th, scrambling 14th, putting average 13th. So putting average, that is quite a high number. As we know we've seen tournaments this year where putting average for the average of the winner was second or third across 8-9 tournaments.
See
13 suggests it isn't a pure short game putting fest.
No, it's
more towards that guy that metronomically can find 75-80% of greens and then convert enough of those 5-15-20 feet footers to get the job done. We've also got 3 par 5s this week on a par 71 format. It is by the coast. The par 5s themselves are 554, 554 and 532, reachable to the field. So, and you do see this, I don't think it's a pure bombers golf course. In Kuchar, Keziah, Pat Perez and Graham McDowell, I'm not seeing 335-yard Cameron Champ bombers winning this.
Your 285, 290 guys can competitive compete, can't they?
It's what we saw in Bermuda a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
That's kind of where I'm at, and I'm also encouraged by price. Kuchar was 60-1 winning this last year.
It's mad looking back at it. For a player of his quality in that field.
Clearly, he wasn't tearing up trees form-wise, hence 60-1, but you could have built a case.
Yep.
Pat and Keziah was hot on form at 70-1. Pat Perez had just literally arrived from Las Vegas from a 7th place finish, 125-1. And then we had GMAC, 33-1 in 2015. who had been showing quite... Didn't have any top tens, but you just, if you'd been watching the European Tour golf avidly, you just kept seeing McDowell in kind of semi-contention mix over September into October, and then he came here and smashed it at 33-1. You average out the winning price here across the last six renewals, so since they brought in the wraparound season, 62-1.
Yeah.
Bit of value shout, doesn't shout to me Victor Hovland at 20-1.
No.
Some although I think he can tear the course apart. My summary would be Jason Day's here to try and get his game in some sort of shape for the President's Cup. Victor Hovland, I think he's playing this because he thinks he's got a great chance of winning it, and he probably has. Matt Kuchar hasn't played since the Tour Championship. That's a big no-no for me. And then you've got Tony Finau, the enigma that is Tony Finau. 22-1 in this field, it isn't a crazily horrible price, but it's something I'm not getting involved with.
No, for a guy who just doesn't convert, it's...
We say that every week.
Yeah.
His only win was on Paspalum Greens in Puerto Rico. So, I'm nowhere near that. I think I've backed Billy Horschel here in the past because you look at Horschel and we talk it through. Horschel is a streaky putter. He's fantastic from tee to green. A real top-level ball striker. And when I've tipped him here in the past, and you just look at his numbers, he just struggles to putt here year in, year out. You know, he's putting at 1.8 every year around here.
Yeah.
And that isn't going to win you the title.
No.
And I can't back him at 22-1 on that basis. 45-1, yeah, different kettle of fish. The one, of course, you know, Charles Howell III, Joachim Niemann, I can't find a top 10 on any surface bar bent grass or bent power for Joachim Niemann. So I'm not going to be backing him as short as 25-1 when he hasn't got a top 10 finish on either Bermuda or Paspalum to his record. The one that would have interested me right at the top was Charles Howell III, and that's the one that might come and bite me on the bottom because I am a Charles Howell fan. 30-1 isn't a bad price. We know that he always comes to the party by the coast. He's fighting to get in the top 50. I think he's at 53rd in the world, something like that. He's always at that kind of mark, though, isn't he, CH3? Just always in that kind of 50 to 60 spot or just in the high 40s.
Yeah, just hovers around and banks a lot of money each year, doesn't he?
I never like taking some of these guys that actually are Mexican here. Ansa or Carlos Ortiz has been playing some nice golf. I just don't know. Until I see one of these Mexicans win one of their home tournament, I'm not likely to tip them. The one in the end I went for and I was forced to go for, it wasn't really a willing decision. But if he did turn up here and if he did have a good week, and if he did win it and I hadn't tipped him, I would have been jumping out of my office window. Is Russell Knox. And we've had success in the past, haven't we, with blatant, obvious players that are half decent price. You know, I can remember Brandt Snedeker last year at 28s. I'm not saying Knox is quite in that form, but if you wanted to, I guarantee you, if I sat over a pint of Diet Coke with Russell Knox and he's sitting there doing some Pilates on the other side of the desk because he's into his Pilates these days, I guarantee you tell me that El Chameleon was in his top three golf courses on the planet. And you might find that he'd actually say it was his most favourite. But the guy absolutely loves it round here and he's just trending, isn't he?
Yeah. Knox.
And when you actually look at his record, three main tour victories, one WGC, won the Travellers, won the Irish Open last year at Ballyliffin by the coast. And when you just look at the way that he does win, it's always at this kind of price point and it's always where he's just had a period of GIR monstrosity, just constantly banging the greens back, and the putter just slowly but surely ekes another little bit of a digit off and another bit of a digit off, and eventually he just takes off and wins one.
Yeah.
And I just think this could be the week for him.
Played well at Bermuda, didn't he?
He did, didn't he? And just fell away. But, you know, let's not take that as a negative. You often see this with guys that then come and win. They don't all, you know, and these guys aren't perennial contending machines like John Rahm every week, are they? Or, you know, like an elite player like a Justin Thomas. These guys have patches of contending.
Yeah.
He's been second, third and ninth here on his last three visits. And this was crazy. I don't think I've seen this. As you know, I have 8-week trackers. And this week, I'm tracking the traditional stats because strokes gained are no good now because we've had so many tournaments where strokes gained aren't recorded. Russell Knox is in the top 20 for driving accuracy, greens in regulation, scrambling and putting. I don't think I've ever seen a player in all four.
Full house.
Full house, mate. And that is just perfect for him. So Knox is in at 33s. I managed to get 8 places with Paddy Power, which I thought was fantastic. If we're going down this OWGR route again, there was success last week with Hatton. The one that really, really came close to me and could be the one that really kills me is Keegan Bradley.
Right.
Because he is 49th in the world. We know that he thrives on soft golf courses, takes them apart. Bearing in mind that BMW Championship last year was on a sopping wet Aronimink course.
Yeah.
He's had an 8th and a 15th here in 2 visits. I think he's in the top 3 for scoring average on our scoring average sheets. But he's been showing flashes with the putter as well, Bradley. Bearing in mind, don't forget he played in the final group for 36 holes with Tiger in Japan.
Yeah.
And guess what? It was the second round on that really wet course where he threw in some ridiculous 64 or something.
He can't he?
I think Bradley's going to have a good week.
He can just find that putter every now and again and then he completely he loses it, doesn't he?
I just can't. Just look at the way that I analyse this and the numbers I've taken over the years. He does not appear in that 5 to 15 feet range that I need winners to actually show. He just doesn't appear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reason I haven't backed him. The one that does appear at the same price point, who I think might have a little bit of motivation behind him this week, is Kevin Kisner.
Yeah.
And if you look at Matt Kuchar and you had a chart of where Matt Kuchar's played well and where Kevin Kisner's played well, I reckon they'd be identical. The only thing Kisner can't do, he can't play in the desert for some reason. Doesn't like the thin air or whatever. But if you just look at coastal courses or other courses, Kisner and Kuchar are almost identical.
Mm.
And there's this rumour that Koepka's in serious trouble with his knee, isn't he? For this President's Cup.
50-50, isn't it?
It was a lot of mention in Golf Magazine and on Golf Channel last week in the States, and he's seriously 50-50. And if that's the case, I think we're in a land, aren't we, where it's either Ricky Fowler, who isn't playing this week, and won't play the RSM next week. It's Kevin Na, it's Kevin Kisner. And if you look at Kevin Kisner's match play record, isn't it one of the best in the world on the planet?
Yeah.
If Kisner shows up this week and literally top 5 or goes and wins this, if Koepka was to fall out, he's locked up his spot, hasn't he, effectively? Mm. And I just think it's those little intricacies sometimes that... And I'm prepared to back Kisner at 40-1. Bear in mind, he was 12th at the Northern Trust, 9th at the BMW Championship and 9th at the Tour Championship against the very best players in the world over that 3-week FedEx Cup playoff stretch.
Yeah, not too shabby, is it?
He was 8th after 54 holes at HSBC. I'm sure you've noticed his name on the leaderboard when you were covering that tournament a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
He shot 10 under across Friday and Saturday, which was only beaten by Paul Waring, and was the equal of Louis Oosthuizen and Rory McIlroy.
Yeah.
Both single-digit. McIlroy won at single digits and Louis Oosthuizen's the single-digit favourite this week in South Africa. And I'm grabbing Kisner at 40-1. Great by the coast. This is The only reason we're getting that price is he's had two missed cuts here and a 60th from three appearances. And the first missed cut and the 60th were when he was a real, you wouldn't have even known who Kevin Kisner is. Mm. He was that far down the kind of pecking order back in his early days on the tour. And the last missed cut was when he came here after 8 weeks of not playing since the FedEx Cup playoffs a couple of years ago. So he was just using it as a warm-up for the RSM, which is a tournament that clearly he loves because he's one of the Sea Island Mafia.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just think Kisner, on the basis that he's played two in Asia, there's this thing about Brooks Koepka. I think he'll be taking this tournament very seriously this week. So I took the 40-1 with Betfred, seven places. I get rarely am I surprised in a positive way by prices, but I was amazed to see Harris English chalked up at 66-1 by William Hill on first show yesterday. I was literally like, I walked downstairs and my wife's down there in the kitchen making a cup of tea. And I said to Denise, I said, I can't believe. She just nods because she knows nothing about golf betting at all. I said, I cannot believe there's a guy I'm about to tip up at 66-1. And I thought he'd be a lot shorter than that. And she's going, oh, that's good, dear. That's good. I knew the 66s wouldn't last because it was with William Hill. And sure enough, it had literally disappeared in 20 minutes. But to get 55-1, eight places each way with Paddy Power on Harris English, I think is one of the best prices I've seen for a while. Mm. Fourth, sixth, 33rd and fourth in his last four outings. And he's a winner on this course.
Playing some nice stuff.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah, all does add up nicely, actually.
When you look at Kizaya, who won here at 70-1, and his form in, you just get the feeling that English would be that obvious guy that's clearly playing some fantastic golf and would just turn up and win, and you'd go, why didn't I back him at 55-1?
Yeah, backable price for sure.
It is, isn't it? Loves playing by the sea. Gets on well with Paspalum. He's one of these guys that's clearly gone back to the Corn Ferry playoffs and found something and come back full of confidence.
Yeah.
Brendan Todd a couple of weeks ago, didn't he? Who did well. You said that, didn't he? Finished second in one of those Corn Ferry. Yeah. Then finds his game at Houston and bang, wins the Bermuda at 100-1. I think English is playing far better. Get this, he's so far third for scoring average and fourth for birdie average on the PGA Tour this season. And they played nine tournaments. It's not as if... He's playing some good stuff.
Finally, started off very nicely. Yeah.
Finally. And this is the one that would come and bite me on the arse if I didn't tip him. And it's the one that I had in my mind months and months ago that Harold Varner III is going to win a tournament soon. And it will come on a sopping wet golf course where the ball just stops on the fairways and stops on the greens. Where, you know, you're saying, the caddy's saying to the player, look, it's 128. And literally, you bang it 128 and the ball stops.
Yeah.
That's Varner's gig. Fifth here in 2015, when he was a rookie on tour. And he was sixth here last year. He's played here three times. Averages 68.2, which places him eighth in the field. For scoring average. I think a win is coming for Harold Varner. And don't forget, his only professional win, which came, I think it was it the Australian PGA Championship? Mm. That came in early December. So he likes this kind of late fall time of year.
Bit of biometrics.
So there you go. I've gone Harold Varner III. I managed to grab him at 66s. Unibet were the only company 66s. They're not anymore, but you can grab him 50s, 55s, Harold Varner. So I've gone Varner, English, Kisner, and Russell Knox. So who are you on for this one, Paul?
Very nice. I haven't backed Harris English yet, but I think there's a very compelling case to get involved with him here this week at around 50-1.
Are you going for Graham McDowell at 70-1?
You know, ones that did interest me, Danny Lee interested me, Graham McDowell did interest me actually at that kind of price. The only one I've backed is Ryan Armour at 100-1. Mm. And he's one of those accurate types. Actually, he tends to hit a lot of fairways, and then his greens in regulation doesn't always tend to be up to the same kind of level. But there's been a spark with that over the last couple of weeks, or last couple of starts at least. And that's given me a bit of confidence that he could go well here this week. 23rd in Houston, where he was 14th for greens in regulation, 8th at the Bermuda Championship on his last start, where he was 18th for greens in regulation. And actually, he putted really nicely. He's not the best of putters, Ryan Armour. And when his putting starts to take a step forward, that's another noteworthy element of his game. And he was 9th for putting on his last start at Bermuda. So those elements all look quite nice for a player, I think. And as you said, you don't have to be the longest here, and he's by far...
Not that golf course at all.
No, he's not long compared to the bombers out there by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, he seems to be playing some nice stuff from tee to green and putting well, which is good. In fact, 4 top 12 putting performances in his last 8 starts, which is a bit of an eye-opener for someone like Ryan Armour. Going back way in the day, he was 4th here in 2007 on his debut, 21st here last year. And in fact, he shot 3 decent rounds, 67, 67, 66. It was only the Saturday 71 that let him down. Otherwise, he'd have been far, far closer. And you talked about biorhythms a second ago. The only PGA Tour event that he won was in the Fall Series. It was the Sanderson Farms back in 2017. So, yeah, there was a few nice pointers for Ryan Armour for me at 100-1. I thought it was well worth taking a chance on.
Bigger prices, I'd be interested in. Austin Cook, I think, could go well.
Hmm.
He was in the top, I think he shot 62 or 63 to the last outing in Houston in round one, first round leader. Always plays well on Bermuda grass or something of that ilk. There's something bubbling with Cook. Don't forget he won his only PGA Tour event at Sea Island a couple of years ago.
Mm.
So biorhythms again. I'm seeing Cook as big as 125 to 1 and as short as 90 to 1. So there's that kind of bookmaker
disparity.
Change of views that sometimes you can take advantage of. I thought you might like a bit of Xing Zhen Zhang as well. He's playing some nice stuff, isn't he? I know he let you down at the HSBC, but even then he wasn't a total disgrace.
No,
at World Golf Championship level.
Yeah.
Playing some nice stuff, Zhang.
Yeah, there's a few you could build a case for. I mean, Luke List at 125-1, that'll catch the imagination of some players as well.
Seeing Zhang up at 100-1, or he's a short with some firms at 60-1. 66 is with Coral. So Zhang's another one. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be a good tournament.
Yeah.
The other one I really toyed with, and I asked you some questions about him and about what he'd done in the past, was Dylan Fratelli.
Yeah.
Just couldn't find enough form on the PGA Tour tracks I was looking for to persuade me that he would that he was the man for the job. But he's played here before. And I think there's a 66-1 price point out there on Dylan Fratelli, and he's been playing some nice stuff, the South African. And he won was it Mauritius?
Yeah.
Another coastal course at this kind of time of year on, we think, Paspalham Greens. We're not 100% certain.
Yeah, it's a bit patchy on the European Tour with that particular
data
event.
But Dylan Fratelli's been playing some nice stuff, so he's another one that could show up. 50-1 or 45-1, you can get 66s with Ladbrokes right now, but only the 5 places on Dylan Fratelli. I think that's us, isn't it? Oh, Danny Lee, I must mention, I was all over Danny Lee like a rash. Look at his record. I've never seen Danny Lee go back-to-back on the PGA Tour, arriving at a course that he'd got a top 10 in the previous outing, if you see what I mean. He was second here last year.
Right, okay.
You know, these players do have these kind of mental blocks.
Yeah, he's got a couple of decent finishes here, hasn't he? But,
it's a soft course, and we know he's a soft course. He loves soft golf courses, Danny Lee. Mm. Second and 10th in his last 2 outings. I mean, I was all over him like a rash at 50-1. But that one thing put me off. So he's likely to win.
As ever.
Mm, of course. You can't pick them all, can you?
No, otherwise you're in the back and after field.
Right. Paul, thank you very much for your time. Good luck.
Yeah, best of luck this week.
Thank you. Thank you to the listeners. Again, just one thing to say right at the end here for those that have managed to get to the end. A review on Apple Podcasts for the last show of 2019 would be greatly appreciated by Paul and myself. So if you guys could spend a couple of minutes and get that done, we'd really appreciate it for next week. Of course, we'll read it out at the start of the show. Enjoy your golf this week, and good luck to all of you listeners. We'll be back again next week for the last show of 2019. Goodbye.